Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, February the 19th. What a chilly day up here, 33 or 34. I don't know. We've had Februarys like this before, but the combination of the rain, of course, is what makes it a little bit more more stressful. Well, today we're going to be chatting with our friend George Rodriguez down in South Texas. We'll get a weather report from George in just a second. But we're going to be talking about the 25th Amendment. All of a sudden, you know, we've had a lot of conversation about the 25th Amendment, and all of it coming from an interview that former FBI or Deputy FBI Director Mr. McCade had with 60 Minutes. And 60 Minutes used the 25th Amendment chat to promote the show, and I understand that. They do that with other shows as well. It wasn't maybe as much as we thought it was going to be as far as the amendment, but even the fact that they were talking about this should raise some questions about the level of seriousness of these men. You know, the 25th Amendment, just to refresh your memory, became the law of the land, constitutional amendment, in 1967, had nothing to do with politics. It was to protect the president and the country against, for example, a president who suffered a stroke like Woodrow Wilson did the last year of his presidency, or if you had an incapacitated president, let's say you had an assassination attempt, but the president wouldn't recover, or he would be indefinitely out of work or out of commission. So that's what it was for. It was the very thoughtful process of fixing this problem so that the nation would have a commander-in-chief. And what this amendment was doing in these conversations is beyond me. Let me say hello to my friend George Rodriguez. How's the weather, George?
It's real rainy and cold here.
Yeah, it's about the same here.
I think the temperature has gotten as high as 46, and that's it today. And it's drizzly and just nasty, just a nasty day.
Yeah, it's about like that here. I think it's like 30 in the Metroplex, is anywhere from 32 to 38. That seems to be the range right now. It's not supposed to snow, and it's supposed to be back to the 40s tomorrow. But right now, because of the rain, I think that's what makes it difficult. When are you coming to Dallas to do your speeches, by the way?
I will be in Dallas on Thursday evening. I'll be speaking at correct address here. I will be speaking in North Dallas,
mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun. It should be an interesting.
Well, I'm looking forward to watching you because I'll be available that night. So I'm looking forward to. Is it a dinner and a presentation? How is it?
It is a meeting of the far North Dallas Tea Party Patriots, and it's at 5999 Summerside Drive in North Dallas.
Okay. All right. Well, I think you sent me the information, but if you could send it again, because I do plan. So is it a meeting? I mean, is it open to the public?
Oh, yeah. No, it's open to the public. It's an open meeting.
Okay. All right. Well, I like to go. Let's send me the information, and then we'll talk off the air tomorrow. What are you actually driving up?
Well, actually, I'm flying in tomorrow afternoon.
And, okay.
Yeah, because I was going to drive, but driving through Austin traffic and then driving through Dallas traffic, I said, I'll just fly up in Southwest.
That's not a bad idea, George. Not a bad idea. Spare yourself a little stress.
Yes.
Let me get to the topic here of the 25th Amendment. You know, you were in Washington. That's why I wanted to get your perspective, because you were there on the day that there was the assassination attempt on President Reagan. We all remember that day quite well. And that was probably, ever since the amendment was passed in 67, that was probably the closest that anybody ever came to talking about, let's say, using the amendment. Because President Reagan was in the hospital, as you remember, part of that afternoon and into the evening. And even though, you know, we thought he would recover, no one really knew what kind of condition he'd be in after the assassination attempt. So, you know, I remember some It's not really big, but some talk about the 25th Amendment at that time. What do you remember of that day, George, and the president's condition, and just what do you remember that day?
Well, it was quite a scary day. I mean, I do remember being quite scared and concerned. As you recall, first of all, he was a very, very unpopular president among a lot of the left, the radical left. I mean, we didn't have it as bad as it is now, but there were a lot of folks who flatly, you know, did not like President Reagan. He was very, very much a disliked figure by a lot of the leftists, of the hardcore Democrats. Secondly, very much like in this president, because he was conservative, he wanted to shrink the government. You had a lot of people like Jesse Jackson and a few others that had screamed and yelled and, you know, accused him of everything from, you know, being a racist to everything else. So when the incident occurred, and it was only about, you know, the fourth month into his presidency when it occurred, it was quite shocking for all of us, because we thought, you know, a lot of these threats were coming to fruition. In Washington, as you may have seen in the past, whenever you go to D.C., there are always a lot of protesters in D.C. There's always a lot of folks carrying signs and whatnot in front of the White House. Consequently, you kind of get used to the idea that, you know, somebody is angry about something and they are demanding this or demanding that. And in this case, the situation occurred right after lunch. He had gone to speak at an event, and on his way out, John Mark Chaplin shot him. And the first thing that we heard was he had been shot and nothing else. There was a complete blackout on news by the White House. There were eyewitnesses that saw I can't remember the gentleman's name. His aide that was
yeah, the press secretary, wasn't it?
Yeah, the press secretary that got shot in the head.
Right, right.
And that was shocking enough. The reports of what they had seen.
Mm-hmm.
They also had seen the president, you know, limping over to the car.
Right.
And some blood visible.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, it was quite scary, not only the blackout, but what was going on. Then there was confusion. Then the confusion began, because once, you know, the media started scrambling to try to find out what was going on, there was absolute craziness going on. And you have the Secretary of State, he slips my mind right now.
I know it's amazing how these names escape you.
Yeah.
But Secretary of State. I know I cannot remember his name either, but he was the one who came out.
He came out and immediately said that he was in control, that everything was okay,
right.
and he was in control.
But
and,
what he meant
of course,
to say, though, what I didn't mean to interrupt you, George, but what he meant to say, he didn't mean to say that he was number two. He meant to say that everything was fine, that everything was in control. I mean, he wasn't, because you may remember, there's another element, too, that often gets lost in the discussion. Vice President Bush, at the time, was on a plane headed to Japan. So the vice president was not in Washington, D.C. at the moment. So his plane, of course, was turned back immediately.
Yeah.
But there was a certain amount of confusion.
A lot of the confusion was fueled by reporters too, though.
That's
the problem. And
that's always happened. Yeah, there was a lot of speculation, as I recall.
Right.
But I think, as I remember, the reason I wanted to bring this up is because that was a situation where, let's say, you know, thankfully President Reagan survived and went on to serve two terms, and he was back at work, I think, in a couple of weeks and all of that, even though we now know that he probably was never the same person. You could not be. But clearly he survived and was able to serve two terms. But I remember personally, George, watching all of this. I happened to be in Mexico City when this happened. And I remember watching, and we couldn't quite figure out how ill he was. And in my mind, across my mind a couple of times, when I said, well, if he cannot, you know, if he cannot go to work, or if he's incapacitated or out for several months, whatever it may be, what happens to the country? What happens
That's exactly
to,
right.
Yeah, what happens to the presidency? Because obviously you have to have a man who, you know, you can't, if, you know, nuclear weapons are headed to the United States, you can't say, well, gee, let's wait until the president wakes up or recovers. You can't do that.
Well,
so there has to be a person in charge. And that's what the 25th Amendment was all about. I mean, for that kind
exactly.
of situation, George.
Exactly. And the president, and President Reagan was never in that kind of a situation. The minute that he got that he was rolled into the emergency room, he was joking. The problem was that no one was told about that. And so, you know, the speculation was running rampant as to how serious he was and whether or not he was going to make it. I mean, it was but in actuality, those in the know, those that were in, you know, surrounding him, including Vice President Bush, including, you know, the immediate staff, they knew that he was okay. He was all
right.
He was not. He was not in a. I mean, he was injured, and the injury was serious, but he was never unconscious or unable to make a decision or anything of the nature.
Right.
And
but
so that was a big difference between between him and, you know, and another any other situation that there might have occurred.
That's right, and I think that, you know, I think that the reality is the very next day, as you may remember, there was a picture that on the front page of most newspapers of President Reagan and Mrs. Reagan. They were both like holding a newspaper or something like that.
Correct.
I remember that picture. I think that kind of settled the situation in the country a little bit. But the reason I bring this up is because when you were, as I was, you know, out of the country, or for most Americans who probably didn't know the condition of the condition of the president at the time, you know, there was the question that I think many people asked themselves, and that was, well, what happens now? By the way, the gentleman that you were thinking of, the Secretary of State that you were thinking of, is Alexander Haig.
Yeah, Alexander Haig.
Alexander Haig, yeah, who was Reagan's first Secretary of State. I had a big doubt about that, too. I couldn't remember the name Alexander Haig, and I just quickly looked it up, but it was Alexander Haig. But I think that what makes all of this discussion now about the 25th Amendment is how, you know, what an insult I think that is to our intelligence to be talking about the 25th Amendment because you don't like somebody because you have political differences with somebody.
It is completely different from what these characters were discussing. I mean, it is completely different.
Right.
At best, they were claiming that he was not competent because of his personality. I mean, for crying out loud, you know, given that, then who is competent to be president, you know, based on their personality? I mean, please.
Well, but yeah, that's right. And the whole point of the 25th Amendment was always about the incapacitation of the president, not his political skills.
His personality.
Or his personality or what party he's from. I mean, that's not what it's about. And I think that these people are probably going to go before a Senate committee, I think. So Lindsey Graham, Senator Graham, is apparently going to bring him before a Senate committee and ask him a few questions, and I hope he does. Because I like to know what the heck this meeting was about. I mean, this idea that you have, you know, senior people of the government talking about the 25th Amendment, I don't know. I mean, that's troubling. It should be troubling to everybody, but for you being there in Washington that day that President Reagan was shot, and for me watching it on TV, you know, even though, yes, he was joking, and I mean, we know now the story that he was joking and he was serious, but never seriously close to dying or anything like that. But there was a moment of time there, maybe a few hours, when we really didn't know.
Exactly.
And, you know, these recoveries, as you know, George, are not always exact. You know, you might be okay, but then develop other problems and so on. But if you have a situation where the President of the United States, let's say, is in a hospital and for extended periods of time, even days, has to be under amnesia or something, you know, or completely out of work, well, you cannot run the country that way. And that's what the 25th Amendment was about. And it was a pretty darn serious thing. And this 25th Amendment, you know, was something actually very well crafted and very well done, I thought, by the people who did it. And to turn it into a political weapon, that's upsetting to me, George.
That is absolutely pathetic because, again, I tend to have a lot of confidence in people that are at that high level that are working around the president. I mean, I fully feel that they made the correct decisions and they were in control of their faculties without getting emotional. I think that they were handling it the way that it should have been handled. You know, it's really, really sad that these characters, as we're finding out now, chose to, you know, have a meeting as was described by one attorney on TV, that they were discussing a coup d'etat, literally.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's right.
And it is really, really, it sets a dangerous precedent, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
It sets a dangerous precedent.
Absolutely, because they should have never been talking about this. I mean, when you're the – I don't know exactly what the process is, but I would think that if you ever had a situation, let's say, where the president was incapacitated – or let's say he was shot and was, you know, unconscious for days or whatever, I would think that this conversation would be with the vice president and maybe the heads of Congress and maybe some people in the cabinet, Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, people like that, who would be sitting around saying, you know, we got to do something here because we don't have a commander in chief, or we don't have a functional commander in chief, and we got to do something. That's fine, but not a subdirector of the FBI, not a deputy attorney general. Those are not the people who should be talking about this. And if they feel those concerns, they need to take it up the chain and to somebody. And I have a feeling, George, I'll say this. I don't know this. Apparently, it never got to Vice President Pence. The conversation never got that high. And I would venture to say that if it had gotten that high, that Pence would have thrown them out of the office.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Pence would have called the police and said, throw these people out.
Exactly. I have the fullest confidence in Pence having done that. I really do. And I think that shows, again, that, you know, that they didn't raise it that far or that they didn't mm-hmm. care to raise it that far. I think it shows that they themselves knew that they were doing the wrong thing.
Right. And it's just a lack of seriousness. That's how I look at it. You know, it's just a lack of seriousness. You know, it's like a bunch of doctors, you know, sitting around in the lunchroom one day and saying, you know, why don't we shut this machine off for that patient or something like that. I mean, that would be unacceptable talk.
Yeah, right.
By doctors.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, doctors would be fired if they would say something like that. And this fellow McCade, I think he's got other problems, but on this particular one, I was not very impressed that he would even mention this in a meeting. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Let me do this, George. Let me take a quick break, and then when we come back with our friend George, we're going to be talking a little bit about the border emergency and what appears to be another lawsuit. We seem to be living in the land of lawsuits here in the United States. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos. We'll be right back.
This is Carlos Guerrero Harpy. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Sissiki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Sissiki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos on the show information. And even today, with the cold weather, he's going to be playing somewhere in the Dallas area. George, as you probably know by now, 14 or 16 states have come together to file a lawsuit against President Trump over the so-called border emergency. And the good news, I guess, is that 34 states have not joined in. So at least in that sense, more states are not playing this game. The 16 states are the ones that you could have predicted: California, New York, Illinois. I'm surprised that Arizona is doing this, or New Mexico, not Arizona. New Mexico is doing this because they have a border. Though, I mean, they need to know what the heck's going on the border. But it's interesting to me that this is always happening, that they're always, it seems like they always have to oppose President Trump. But as I understand what he did, George, and you perhaps know more about it than I do, but as I understand, all he's going to be doing is using funds that have already been allocated by Congress or approved by Congress. Move them around a little bit, but he's not spending money that the Congress didn't allocate.
That's exactly right. I mean, the money is already there. It's just a question of him allocating it according to the needs. That is his power. That is his that's why they call him the chief executive, because he is the manager of the government itself, the agencies. So therefore, if an agency needs this or that, he is able to address that need and address that action. Additionally, that's why they also call it an emergency, because under his emergency power, he can move it. He can move with a little bit more discretion the activities and the money. Mm-hmm. You know, what is amazing to me is the way that the Democrats have been couching it today and yesterday, by claiming that one Democrat said that he was endangering the military by moving some money around. Well, you know, where was this individual when Obama was cutting the military left and right, when they were doing severe cuts on the military? Where was he?
Right.
I mean, it is so, you know, their arguments are so ironic and at the same time so preposterous that it makes me wonder, do they listen to themselves when they're talking?
Well, and I think a lot of it, as you said, it's very political, the whole thing. But, I mean, he is simply taking money from this account and putting it in this other account. And there are provisions, I understand, in the Homeland Security and in the Department of Defense. I'm not sure which one, but there are one of these two budgets has provisions for doing something about if they discover, for example, certain parts of the border that have, let's say, more than expected drug traffic or whatever. They can actually do some things on those sides of the on those parts of the border. But I think, George, one last point I wanted to make. I want to get your feedback on this, because I wrote a post about this a couple of days ago where I argued over at the American Thinker that this is really not about the courts, in my opinion. The courts will decide whatever they want to decide. But this is really about the court of public opinion. And it seems to me that that what President Trump is doing very effectively is really pushing the Democrats into a corner where they basically believe there's no crisis on the border. So they don't think there's a crisis of any kind on the border, that this is all a manufactured crisis. That's not a corner that I would want to be in, George, because that is so outside of reality. I mean, if their position was, well, we don't believe that there should be a fence in every inch of the border, or we don't believe this, let's talk about this, let's talk about that, but yes, there is a crisis. If that was their position, I think that would make a lot more sense. But to say that it's all a manufactured crisis, I think that's a dangerous position to take, George.
I agree. Just a spectacle of Beto O'Rourke being down there the other day when the president was, and standing there declaring that fences were not necessary, you know, that made for a great campaign photo op against him. I mean, how can you say that? How can you say that you don't need to defend the border? You know, in essence, what I mean, he is advocating for open borders, and it's not,
right.
You know, it's not just a question of him supporting the wall. It's that he, you know, makes the comment that there is no problem with the border. That's the outrageous point of it. So
I agree. I agree. No, I totally agree. I think that if, you know, I think honest people can disagree as to what types of security we need.
Exactly.
You know, honest people can disagree about that. You know, you can say, well, no, I don't think we should have a border here, maybe here, but not here. I think honest people can disagree on that. And I myself, you know, I put myself in that category where I'm willing to listen to different things we can do. We don't have to have a border from San Diego to Brownsville. I don't think that's necessarily the solution. But we have to have a border in many places. But again, getting back to my point, to say that there's no crisis, that this is a manufactured crisis,
I think that's the biggest headache that I see.
That potentially is a landmine for them.
Yep, yep. And
I can see
that. So hesitant to admit it. They seem so hesitant to admit it. I mean, on the contrary, they'll buckle down and they'll say that, you know, not only is there no crisis, we don't need ICE.
That's right. No, that's even more ridiculous. I mean, that is even more ridiculous. Well, George, I want to thank you again for joining us today. I look forward to your visit to Dallas in a couple of days.
Yes,
and
here's something
for you to think about the rest of the day, George. Smokey Robinson is 79 today.
Oh my gosh!
So that
I don't feel old. I don't feel old.
No, not at all. Smokey Robinson, the great singer and songwriter, let's not forget that, is 79 today. So when you are maybe at the airport waiting for your plane, you know, put a little Smokey Robinson music in your iPhone.
You got it, buddy. Thank you very much.
All right, George.
Have a good one.
All right. Have a great day, George. George Rodriguez, our good friend down in San Antonio, talking a little bit about the 25th Amendment. George, of course, worked in the Reagan and Bush White Houses and was there on the day that Reagan was assassinated, or not the attempt to assassinate President Reagan. And, of course, I remember that quite well. I remember that afternoon, that evening, when he was in the hospital, even though he was under care and, you know, recovering and so on. You know, you really didn't know how bad he was or what the consequences would be. I mean, you can easily derail into all kinds of problems when you're in that kind of a situation. He's also, as he was at the time, he was 70, had just turned 70, I think. So you have that other issue as well. But it worked out for Reagan, of course. It worked out for the country. But it certainly, you know, when you hear people talk about the 25th Amendment and using the 25th Amendment to remove President Trump, that, I think, is dangerous talk, very dangerous talk. And the people who do that, like Mr. McCade or anybody else who was in that room who was even talking about this, they have some explaining to do, as Ricky Ricardo used to say, some explaining to do. And by the way, I think they're going to be doing it to the Senate, because Senator Lindsey Graham is apparently going to call some hearings on this, and he wants to ask these people, what were you thinking and who else was involved? Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.